So if I were able to choose a text to preach on a day like this, that probably wouldn't be my first choice. I'd probably choose something from the Apostle Paul, like his letter to the Ephesians, when he knows that he probably won't see that congregation again. Maybe something from the Gospels, when Jesus is preparing to say goodbye to the people that he's served and loves. Not that I can compare my 4 years as the associate pastor to anything Paul or Jesus did, but I think those texts would give me a little more material to work with as I begin to say goodbye over these next couple of weeks. As I said, you've been a wonderful faith community, not only for me to worship with and serve, but also for my family. And I want to say goodbye over these next couple of weeks in a way that honors that. And I don't think this passage from the Hebrews is going to help me out much today. Maybe that's okay. I do have a couple of weeks left, and to say goodbye now may be a bit premature. At any rate, pastors don't get to choose, or most don't get to choose, the lessons that they get to preach on, and this is the one that's assigned for today. So I'm going to work it out. Again, it's not my first choice given all of the other circumstances going on. Not only does this lesson not give a lot to work with in terms of preparing to say goodbye, I also know I'm not alone in my thinking when I say that Hebrews is a hard book to preach on. For one thing, people just don't read this book as much anymore. I think Hebrews lost some of its popularity when Bible scholars started to point out that the Apostle Paul didn't write Hebrews. This book is also pretty complex. It deals with a lot of parts of the Jewish faith that have been long forgotten by most of us, other than the Bible scholars who still seem interested in that kind of thing. There are parts of the Jewish sacrificial system that most of us just don't understand. And it really requires a lot of explanation that I think can become pretty dull. The other thing that makes Hebrews tough to preach on is the fact that it isn't really very politically correct, as people in this day and age would say. One of the main messages of the author of this Hebrews text that he is trying to get across is that the Christian faith is better than the Jewish faith. And that message doesn't play as well in an age when we're working to be more accepting and less judgmental of other faiths. In a time where we work to have interfaith dialogues, and when we find opportunities to work to serve together as members of different faiths to change our world for the better. But this author has claimed in chapter 4, verse 15, that Jesus is a far better high priest than any of the other priests. Jesus, he says, is the great and sympathetic high priest. This wouldn't have been an easy announcement to sell to the audience that heard the book back in that day. So he spends 10 verses, these 10 verses that we heard from chapter 5, talking about how Jesus is qualified to be such a high priest. Christians in our day may not have much trouble with this. But back then, it would have been like comparing it to a presidential campaign for us. So last week, our family heard a radio ad for a man I had never heard of who said he was going to run for president. And my kids asked why in the world there would be a message more than a year before the election about someone who wants to run for president. And I agree. And yet the presidential campaign is in full swing. There are some 20 candidates for the Republican Party, and the number of Democratic candidates, I'm sure, will climb in the next few weeks or months. As in any election, one of the things being debated are the qualifications of the candidates. Yes, each candidate has to have a vision for the country's economy, for our foreign policy, and for our future. But if the candidate doesn't have the qualifications to see that vision through, no matter how compelling that vision seems, they don't have a chance of making it to their party's final candidate, let alone being elected President of the United States. So we talk a lot about someone's qualifications for being president, just like this author of Hebrews talks a lot about the qualifications to be the high priest. His presentation moves pretty slow, kind of like our election process. But it's important that he establish that Jesus has all of the qualifications of the great high priest, or the whole plan of salvation will get stuck and his listeners will not be convinced. So he spends a lot of time on that subject. However, the thing that draws my attention in the middle of hearing about all of those qualifications, in the middle of that slow-moving presentation, is the idea of the incarnation. The notion that the Son of God would come to be among us in the flesh. And not only that, but to live a life that many would probably consider quite difficult, and also one who underwent an incredibly painful death. All that so that we might have the kind of high priest who can sympathize with our weakness, who's been tested just like we are, and yet one who, as the author clearly points out, did not sin. That type of obedience in the argument of this Hebrews author qualifies him for the office of the high priest, because it demonstrates his capacity to sympathize with our struggles, one of the qualifications, according to this Hebrews author, for being a high priest. When we hear the word sympathy today, it may seem somewhat superficial. We're reminded of people who tell us they know how we feel when there really is no way they could possibly understand. Perhaps it's a word, sympathize, that's been overused so much that it's lost some of its meaning. But for this Hebrews author, the word sympathize conveys Jesus' depth of feeling for those who are weak. He actually enters into their struggle with them. And this fact that Jesus is willing to enter into our struggles, to become so vulnerable in the flesh, in his time on earth, in the incarnation, reveals that we have a tremendously gracious God. As Hebrews states, having been made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey or trust in him, having been designated by God a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Trust in this gracious God becomes central to the type of obedience that God has in mind for us. From the eyes of our Lutheran tradition, we often see this obedience or trust as a gift of faith. That faith, as we understand it, is seen in the belief that we have a God who is good and who is merciful. It's a belief that's tested throughout our lives. It's a belief that's tested every time we look and see that it seems like evil has the upper hand in the world. It's a faith that's being tested every time when we look out and we don't see that much mercy is being displayed. Yet we're reminded by this author that when we fail, when we are less than faithful in our belief that we have a good and gracious and merciful God, and when we don't always choose to be good or merciful or gracious in our own lives because of the sympathy Christ has for us in our weakness. The author writes that we could approach the throne of mercy with grace and with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. As Bible scholar Craig Kester says, Jesus' sympathy is designed to awaken a sense of boldness to approach him in prayer. He enters into suffering in order to empower people to move through the suffering they are experiencing to a renewed life of grace. But why should the obedience of Jesus as a human being matter to us as people of faith? Why does salvation depend on a high priest who has to wrestle with weakness, who prays to God when he is in crisis, and who learns what it means to be truly human? Why does Jesus' service as high priest require that he be able to identify with us lowly human beings? For me, one of the best answers was found in a column that was entitled The Man and the Birds, where religion editor Lewis Castles retells the story of a man who refused to attend his family's Christmas Eve service because he did not believe in the incarnation. So he remained at home, and it began to snow. Minutes later, he heard at the window what sounded like somebody was throwing snowballs at his window. So he went outside to investigate, and he found a flock of birds trying to fly through his window as they sought refuge from this winter storm. He thought they might find better shelter in the barn, so he made his way there. He opened the doors, he turned on the lights, but the birds remained outside. So he created a trail of crumbs for them to follow into the barn, but that didn't work either. He tried to shoo them into the barn, but that effort also proved unsuccessful. So he said to himself, if only I could be a bird myself for a few minutes, perhaps I could lead them to safety. At that moment, the church bells began to ring and the man sank to his knees in the snow. Now I do understand, he whispered. Now I understand why you had to do it, why you had to become human. You see, in the New Testament, the idea that Jesus is the Word made flesh not only means that Jesus really and truly understands and truly shows us what God is like. It not only means that Jesus shows us that God really and truly does understand what it means to be a human. This incarnation also means that by fully entering into our reality and fully sharing our humanity, God has done all that needs to be done to really and truly redeem us. Jesus said it this way, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for the ransom for the many. The book of Hebrews puts it this way, through what he suffered, Jesus has become the source of eternal salvation for all people. Thanks be to God.